Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, January 31st, 2017, and with me today I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I feel like it's deja vu all over again.
It does kind of have that feeling. It's really weird. John Martellaro, how are you?
I am here again.
Again, I'm so glad that both of you are here. I'm also glad that Blue Apron is our sponsor, and they do the good food stuff delivered right to your door. We'll talk about them in a bit. But before we do that, hey, Brian, you did a little bit more digging into the whole visa thing as it relates to technology companies, and this stems from our conversation yesterday where we were talking about the executive order that was limiting immigration into the country. So fill me in, please.
You bet. So Bloomberg did a piece, published a report on a draft executive order from the Trump White House.
Okay.
And so that bears emphasizing, it's a draft executive order. It may not ever be issued. And if it is issued, it could be changed in any number of ways. Okay, that's, you know, important caveats. Right. But by and large, I mean, it's probably going to be released. I mean, the fact that it exists in draft form, and in fact, the fact that it addresses something that the Trump administration has already been aggressive on, which is immigration. And this also actually rolls into some of the rhetoric that he used on the campaign trail in regards to changing the rules of the road for American workers. So it's probably going to be released, and I would imagine that it's probably not going to be far from the draft form, but you never know. So we'll see. And what this executive order would cover are the various visa programs used by companies to bring in guest workers. And when I say guest workers, in this case, we're talking in particular about the high-skilled workers, like programmers, software engineers, other kinds of engineers. And companies like Apple, a little company we've heard of, and Microsoft, Google, Silicon Valley in general has often used these visas to bring in programmers when they said that they couldn't hire those people locally, when they couldn't fill those jobs with Americans. That's why these programs theoretically exist. It's to make it easier for American companies to hire foreign workers when they can't fill the jobs within America. The visa program that most of us are likely to have heard of would be the H-1B visa program. The executive order actually covers what Bloomberg called an alphabet soup of visa programs. But the most prominent of these is going to be the H-1B visa program. And this is a program that companies like Microsoft have urged be expanded for years, as well as various software lobbying associations that many Silicon Valley companies are members of. And that program is currently limited to 85,000 visas per year, which isn't a lot in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I'm assuming for the number of engineers that tech companies in Silicon Valley alone need, 85,000 is a little constraining.
Yeah, it's a lot constraining. And here's the interesting thing. The companies that have currently, and I don't know exactly how it is that they're managing to do this, but the top five companies utilizing these visas in the last several years have all been IT outsourcing companies. So companies that provide IT services to other companies. So like, you know, I'm a CEO, I've got a company, I've got 500 employees, and I don't want to have my own IT department. So I'm going to give this company Infosys, which is an Indian company, or there's another one called Wipro. I'm going to give them money to run my IT department. And these companies actually bring in a lot of foreign engineers, in particular from India, because they are Indian companies, to do a lot of jobs. And that's where things start to get interesting, because the visa program is supposed to be for bringing in people that you when you can't fill jobs. But the reality is that I don't think it's hard to fill an IT support staff position in the U.S. right now. So, you know, whatever, you make of that what you will, of course. And these companies, two of them in particular, pay an average of $70,000 per year to a software engineer. And this is to people that are being brought in on these visas. Now, okay. Apple, Google, and Microsoft pay software engineers they're bringing in the same programs $100,000 a year, a lot more. But that figure is lower by some 20% the kinds of salaries that they're paying to software engineers that are not brought in on these guest worker programs.
Okay, so just to make sure I've got it right, Apple is paying, well, tech companies in general are paying substantially higher for a job if you are already a U.S. resident, if you are an immigrant.
Yeah, if you have a green card, if you have a green card or you're a citizen.
Yeah, okay, citizen or green card. But if you're an immigrant coming in specifically for the job, you didn't live here before, you're going to make markedly less?
I am mostly pedantic, but you can't call guest workers immigrants because they're guest workers. They're here for a limited duration.
Okay, so fair enough. This is guest workers.
Absolutely guest workers. Right. So the average Glassdoor says that the average salary for software engineer for Apple is $122,000 a year. For Google, it's $126,000 a year. And for Microsoft, it's right about $120,000 a year. Yet all three companies pay software engineers they're bringing in on the H-1B visas $100,000 a year, which is lower. And then, of course, these consultancy companies who utilize the largest number of these visa programs are actually paying something a lot lower, down around $70,000 per year. And that's one of the things that the draft proposal is targeting. Whether or not it would change anything, it's targeting this by requiring employers to prioritize higher paid prospective employees. And what that is theoretically trying to address are the companies who are using these visa programs not to fill jobs that they can't fill, but instead to bring in cheaper workers. Because that has a depressive effect on U.S. worker wages. Theoretically.
Okay.
Theoretically, actually, in practice, I think it's pretty undeniable. But go ahead.
So in that sense, does this sound like a good thing? Because it would remove this artificial cap to salaries.
It could be. I mean, the number of guest workers is so small this will change things for Apple and for Google and for Microsoft and for every other tech company hiring. It will change the way they're able to recruit from overseas. Whether or not it has a huge effect remains to be seen. In general, protectionist measures against protectionist measures in developed economies often have repercussions that are unforeseen. Mm-hmm. And here's what I think will happen. I think that that doing this is going to cause companies like Infosys and Wipro to find ways of doing more of their IT outsourcing overseas.
Oh, okay. So
that would be my guess.
which would have the end result of reducing the pool of foreign workers that technology companies can draw from.
Yes. Probably. Well, maybe. I mean, again, the numbers here just aren't all that high to begin with.
But one thing is true, Brian, is that it doesn't take too many workers on the roles that have lower pay to be able to be pointed at globally, even though it doesn't bring your total salary structure down numerically. It's always something that managers can point to and say, well, look, this guy's working really hard and he's making a lot less money than you are. What are you doing?
Right.
And it can be used in a global sense, even though the numbers are small.
This is absolutely true. But the thing about hastening this could hasten the development of IT companies and infrastructure outside the U.S. That actually is not good for the U.S. economy. That could well further undermine our lead in technology.
All right,
That would be an unforeseen. Yeah, but you know, that's I'm not an expert, and B, you know, we haven't seen that happen yet. I'm just thinking that could be an unforeseen consequence.
You're not an expert, Brian, but that was an excellent explanation of what's going on with that initiative.
Thanks
for the clarification.
Yeah, that was great. And okay, so I have one last question for you. Mm-hmm. I say one last question. We'll see. So. What we're looking at now, let me rephrase that. Am I correct in assuming that assuming this order does get released and it's in the form that it is right now, that the intended goal of improving salaries may not actually happen?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if the cost of the average foreign guest worker in these skilled positions, it wouldn't surprise me if their total costs to U.S. employers increased, meaning that their wages were higher. It wouldn't surprise me if that happened. I'm not sure. I mean, the reality is the same number of people are still going to be brought in because the numbers are so tightly controlled in the first place.
Mm-hmm. But right? Look at the resistance to the minimum wage. When you try to maneuver companies through pressure in some fashion to raise wages, but not by law, which you can't do, they always figure out some alternative, which is usually undesirable and unpredicted. Right.
Yeah. I mean, but in the case of the minimum wage, this is definitely trying to approach the situation from the opposite direction. Now, by the way, there's a bit of, I'm not going to call it irony, but it's should be noted that Donald Trump's own the Trump Organization, which is the umbrella company that operates his commercial enterprises, have brought in hundreds of workers on various. Various visa programs, including H-1B. I think the H-1B people he's brought in have been models, but presumably for fashion-related shows. But then he's also brought in hundreds of people at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida on the H-2B visa program. And by and large, those, you know, the Trump Organization has claimed during the campaign that those workers that they simply couldn't fill those jobs locally, but that is like has been demonstrated is absolute
bunk
nonsense. Yeah, it's not true. So in this particular case, the Trump administration is actually proposing rules changes that could actually negatively impact the Trump Organization. So you know, one of the big concerns has been his separation of his business interests. In this particular case, if these rules actually, if this rule change actually is set forth the way it is in the draft proposal, it could increase his own costs and his own businesses. But I don't know. We'll see. That's just a side note.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, we'll see. Okay. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Blue Apron, and I'm pretty excited that they're sponsoring us, because what they do is come up with really cool meals so that you can try new things without having to spend a lot of time figuring out what it is that you want to eat, because they've done it for you. So as an example, they have in one of their upcoming meal packs, udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs, which to me sounds kind of complicated, but it's not, because what they do is they ship you all the ingredients, fresh ingredients that you need to make the meals, and then they give you really easy to follow instructions so that you can just follow along, look at the pictures, make sure that you're doing it right, and next thing you know, you have this amazing dinner ready to go for you and someone else. And they guarantee all the ingredients that they're sending to you, so you know you're getting fresh, quality food. And they deliver it right to your door. And it's an easy way to try things that you wouldn't have thought to try before. And you get to do it in the comfort of your own home. And you just hit their website and check out what the meals for that week are. And if there's something that maybe doesn't sound great to you, that's okay, because they have other options. So you can pick something else and have what you really want delivered right to you. It's a great way to try things that you wouldn't have eaten otherwise. It's a great way to break up the routine of always eating the same things over and over when you're cooking at home. And you know you're getting really good food because they're sending you those fresh ingredients delivered right to your door. It's a wonderful thing. And each meal averages out to about $10 per person. So that's not bad. And you can, because you're listening to this show, you can get three meals from your first order for free. All you have to do is go to the special website that they set up just for us, and that's blueapron.com/TDO, blueapron.com/TDO. You get the first three meals from your order for free, and you don't pay shipping either, so free shipping. Just head over to blueapron.com/TDO, and thank you, Blue Apron, for being our sponsor. Okay. The other thing I'd like to talk about today, John, you started looking into what's going on with home automation and Apple's pace versus Amazon's pace. And you equated Apple to the tortoise and Amazon to the hare. And I'd like to dive into that a little bit.
I first ran across this wonderful article on Friday at Reuters by Stephen Nellis. And he's talking about the competitive landscape between Amazon, its Alexa-based Echo and Dot, and home automation versus Apple's approach. And he just looks at the complete technical and user interface issues associated with the two. And he introduces the article and talks about the contours of the competition are following classic tech industry dynamic. And what I mean in that sense, and what I think he means is that Amazon has taken a very practical, perhaps likely less secure approach based on a static platform with less emphasis on certification and licensing and security, and more emphasis on ease of use, friendliness, and immediacy. Apple has taken a slower, more methodical approach using the iPhone as its Trojan horse, so to speak, into the system where you install your apps to manage your certified, licensed, and probably more secure devices for the home. And so author Nellis looks at the competitive issues between the two companies and the approaches that they're taking, and it looks like customers are choosing convenience over security and wrapping their heads around the idea of how these Alexa-based devices work. And so it could be a bit of a challenge for Apple to make the case that their system has got a better user interface and has higher standards of security when customers are not seeing a real difference between the way the two products work. Yeah, and I think Amazon has cashed in a little bit on that science fiction dream, too. You know, you don't go on the bridge of the Enterprise and sit down and pull out a device and put it up to your face and talk to the ship's computer. You just stand on the bridge and say, computer, how far away is that star in parsecs? So we've got a sort of a sense of a... highly focused... John, you're standing on the bridge and you say computer, right? So in this case, we say Alexa or whatever you want to say according to the
I think John does ask his house how far away a star is in parsecs.
Yeah, that's probably true.
No,
here's what I would say.
Enterprise doing that. So the competition between the two is up in the air, and Apple seems to be taking an approach that could be in trouble. Go ahead, Brian. You had some great thoughts on this.
I was gonna offer my own example of something that I might say. Can I offer that example at this point?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Here's what I would say. I would say something like, "Computer, turn off Jeff's lights."
And I'm in the dark. Why did I say sure? Go ahead and give me your example.
I am five.
Yeah, and I am in the dark. John, go ahead, Brian.
Here's the interesting bit. This is how I've been thinking about this very topic for a while now. Apple is getting its ass handed to it in the marketplace by good enough devices. And by good enough devices, what I mean is that Google Home and Alexa are both based on trigger words, trigger phrases, and triggers, things that you have to say to achieve a particular desired result. Mm-hmm. And that is cheap and easy. It's the low-hanging fruit of voice interaction. And Apple has, and we know this from interviews that the company executives have given, Apple has been taking a much longer and probably more robust approach of training the artificial intelligence, training Siri to actually understand what it is that we're saying, so that we don't have to use trigger words. And this is all nifty. That's going to be great. That's going to be fantastic when and if Apple actually does bring a device that is like Alexa or Google Home or maybe, you know, something that we can't actually foresee, but kind of what I think Apple will eventually do. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that when is that going to happen? If it takes Apple 3 years to do this, or 4 years, or 2 years, or 5 years to bring that kind of technology to market, it could be too late, because Alexa will have established its ecosystem in the home. Google will have established its ecosystem within the home. If it's anytime this year, anytime in 2017, that's probably not a problem. And it may not be a problem if it's any time in 2018, but it could be. And I think that the further out you go, the more of a problem it becomes.
I agree. And I think we're looking at this. It's coming up on us much faster than a lot of people realize, where Apple will be too late to the game. And part of that is the fact that, and I know it sounds just superficial, but taking your iPhone out of your pocket to talk to your smart home is not as convenient as just walking into the room and issuing a command to your Echo. And that's a big thing. And I'm finding that I am sacrificing security for convenience more and more every day, because I have to keep pulling my phone out of my pocket to issue a Siri command. And it is a lot more convenient to just talk in the middle of the room. And there's also the investment people have made in the devices that they're using. You can buy something that works just across the board with Echo or Google Home or many other smart home systems. But to buy something that also works with HomeKit, you end up having to buy, in many cases, a different product or a different model of a product. And once people have invested enough in their smart bulbs and switches and everything else, they're not going to want to throw that all away and start over with all brand new gear just to be HomeKit compatible.
Right. Yeah, that's why this stuff's time sensitive. I'm sorry, John. Go ahead, please.
No, I think you're exactly right, Brian. It's not so much market share these days as getting out in front and setting the technical standards and user interface standards for how we're going to interface with technology. And once you do that, it's very hard to differentiate yourself and say, well, ours works just like the other guys, but it's better somehow and more Apple and you should buy it. That doesn't work.
Now, to be fair, Apple is never first to market here, right? We're not complaining that Apple isn't first to market here. Right. What I'm concerned about is the foothold that's being established by these good enough solutions. And realize too, this is, to me, this is super important. When Apple does bring some kind of home hub product to market, it's not going to be competing against the Alexa of today. It's going to be competing against the Alexa of tomorrow.
True.
Right? So I look at Alexa and I look at what is Alexa understanding? Like 480 triggering phrases, something like that.
Yep. We'll go with that for sake of argument.
Sounds like it's nothing. I mean, it's ham-fisted. It's lazy. It's cheap. It's the low-hanging fruit, like I said, of voice interaction. But you throw enough trigger phrases at this kind of technology, and soon enough, it becomes indistinguishable from a device that can actually understand you.
Mm-hmm.
And the more time Apple gives Amazon and Google or any other company that's going to try to compete in this space, although I really think that it's going to be Amazon. It could be Microsoft, but I think it's going to be Google, Amazon, and Apple at this, from what we can see right now. But the more time Apple gives these companies to develop their own technologies here, the harder it's going to be for Apple to differentiate itself.
Well, Brian, if Apple's arguments that the iPhone is more secure than the Android phone were convincing, Apple would have 95% of the market, right? So when they try to tell us that their home automation system is more secure, what's going to happen? It's going to fall on deaf ears.
It could.
Yeah, it could. Yeah. And in the meantime, my world is becoming more and more Amazon Echo and less HomeKit.
Like you're some kind of animal.
Like I'm some kind of animal, just sitting here barking out trigger words all day long.
That's fantastic.
Well, you know, I don't think we can top that. So how about if I wrap up the show? Brian, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us, man. It's good. I feel like we've been here before, but it's definitely good.
Yeah, definitely good. John, thank you for being here as well.
You're very welcome. And Brian, you and I went through a 30-minute show, and I must say you were brilliant.
Oh, thank you, John. So were you. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.
On the same page. It's a miracle.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's a Christmas miracle in January.
It's a Christmas. I'm circling the date on the calendar, January 31st, Christmas miracle. Hey, Blue Apron, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, blueapron.com/TDO, and get 3 meals for free off your first order and get free shipping and eat some really good food. It is good stuff. I'm impressed with it. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.